Well, I guess we'll get going. I'm sure a few more will wander in and pull themselves away from the chocolate chip cookies. Our first speaker, Isaac Artzi, is kind of an international guy, born in Romania, moved to Israel as a teenager, educated at Ben-Gurion University, and then he's right now in computer science at Grand Canyon University. And he says that after experiencing a host of isms, communism, socialism, anti-Semitism, Zionism, capitalism, globalism, having traveled and worked on four continents, Isaac has become an admirer of human diversity. And we'll keep that in the room. Not everybody wants to hear about human diversity here in America these days. But so come on up, Isaac, and tell us about the virtual reality in the Bible. Just, if you want to use this laser pointer.
Yeah, I don't need the pronoun, okay. But thank you. Hello, thanks for coming. How tall was Jesus? And how strong was his handshake? Would you want to know that? Okay, so I'll get to that point shortly. So here's what we'll talk about. I will talk a little bit about the Bible study modality, maybe 10 seconds, and then how I propose a better way, using a little bit of AI, a little bit of virtual reality. Then I'll share with you my project and how my students and I are going to build this and how will it work, and some future directions that this research may take us. And then we'll have a discussion. I adapted this quote. I heard it once on NPR. That somebody said, I like the radio better because the pictures are better. Given the audience and the place we are, I assume that you all read books when you were kids. And looking at the colors of your hair, including mine, there were no Nintendo and Xboxes when you were kids, And we read books and imagine how things are. And it was very easy for us to teleport us into those days. And the Bible is no different. So the way we tend to study the Bible and other related topics this way is, you know, you read and you take some notes, and those of us who are lucky enough to be in an academic institution, this still has the old style libraries. This is pretty much how we study Bible. I think this is no longer enough. So here's, in short, a method. I'm going to go with you over the agenda of that method, and then we'll go a little bit deeper into how this would work. First, we will analyze the text. This is what we normally do when we read text, but now I'm talking in terms of writing a software program that would analyze the text in a little bit a more efficient way that we can do, and we'll show you this in a minute. Then in that text, we will use a little bit of artificial intelligence to identify names and items and places so we can create a repository of those names and places. And I'll show you shortly why. Then once we have that repository of the names and the places and situations and so on, we can scan the internet and create a library of authentic pictures. For example, we can go throughout the Middle East and look at pictures of actual places. So when you read a passage from the Bible, you can actually see what it looks like today. And in most places, it doesn't look that different. I remember during the Gulf War, the U.S. forces arrived at Nineveh, which is one of the Babylonian capitals in old times, and there was a big plaque there that says, built by Abu Ghazneser, restored by Saddam Hussein. and it's part of history. And then we can recreate that place in virtual reality. If you ever put on goggles, Microsoft HoloLens, that's what we use, you can immerse yourself in that place. So we can do all that with pictures readily available. Then we can add those characters. We'll talk about this a little bit too. And now we can create the whole situation in virtual reality by interpreting the text. We can, if you ever happen to, any of you have been to the Middle East, please raise your hand. Okay, so some of you have visited. You may have noticed in Sinai or in southern Israel, in Jordan, Iraq, a lot of people live the way they used to live 2,000, 3,000 years ago. They dress the same, they live in tents made of camel skins, and so it's very easy to capture today the image of what it used to be back then. And then we can make it interactive, again, with a use of a little bit of AI. So let's examine this a little bit more in depth. So how do we do it? So we have a simple passage. And he gave unto Moses, when he made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai, two tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of God. Since we know that the Bible was written originally in English, this is obviously the original text. A little bit of software can very easily identify parts of speech. We can perform syntax analysis, we can perform morphological analysis. This has been done, the software exists, we just have to use the package and adapt it. So what I'm showing you right now, it's a concept. I'm extracting the core of what we do. There's no point in going over the actual lines of code here. But what we do, we create that taxonomy in which we identify two characters, Moses and God, items, for example, table of stone. I'm not listing everything, but places, Mount Sinai, and the situations. Those situations are easily recreatable based on our current experience. We just have to map those current experience onto those places with those characters, and we can see how we can recreate that experience. Another example. Sermon on the Mount. And seeing the multitudes and so on, and blessed are the poor in the spirit. You know, would you want to be there and look around and see how this is going on? And we can do the same analysis. We can identify characters, items, places. Would you want to see what the kingdom of heaven looks like? Or some situations, or a mountain? So there's a package. Those of you who might have a little bit of programming experience in the programming language called Python, there's a natural language toolkit. This is all free. All the tools are using here except the hardware are free. So with a little bit of Python programming knowledge, you can perform with maybe 10, 15 lines of code syntax analysis of any paragraph. With a few hundred lines of code, we can perform really deep analysis of text. I'm not even talking yet about text mining. I'm just talking about extracting different grammatical constructs out of sentences. This is very easy. It has been done for years now. It's being taught in all introductory AI classes and introductory data mining classes at the undergrad level. So this piece is easy. Second, how do I identify the characters? Well, what did Moses look like? This is a Bedouin from Sinai, from a stock picture. By the way, I don't have the caption for those pictures. All those pictures are found through Creative Commons, Wikimedia. Nothing is copyrighted. This is a Bedouin. I lived in Israel in the south, in the Negev Desert. They dress like this 10 minutes from my house. today and thousands of years ago. So it's very easy to come across somebody who used to dress as in biblical times. But still, you know, we really don't know what Moses looks like. There's some other paintings that have different depictions of Moses, or I'm sure you're all familiar with this one. That's another. At least they got it right on the tablets. So once we create a database of those characters and a repository of multiple types of faces, maybe dressed for different events, for different times of year, different genders, different ages, we can really use AI then to pull the right character based on understanding of the text. What did Jesus look like? We have some historical like paintings that would depict Jesus like a Bedouin from Sinai, or this is how most people used to dress in the Middle East, or maybe like that. More of a Renaissancean type of character. We don't know, but we can experiment, we can read additional literature and try to cross-reference different writings and try to infer how people dressed, how they greeted each other, how they walked, and so on. And now that we can place all these types of items in a database, we can now create a situation. This is in Sinai. I don't know to identify to you what Mount Sinai really looks like, but when I was in high school in Israel, we took a trip to Sinai and told us, here's Mount Sinai. There is a monastery. Coincidentally, Romanian monks established that monastery in the 15th century, Santa Caterina. Some of you may have been there. And you climb stairs, so actually climbed on Mount Sinai, if this was Mount Sinai, but it's a plausible location, and Sinai doesn't look that different wherever you are. So you can pick a random mountain almost anywhere in Sinai, and in the Sinai desert, you say, yeah, there's a good chance it looks kind of like this. But there's different scenes that you can capture today that will give you a real idea of what it used to look. This could have been a campsite of the Israelites when they got out of Egypt, so very plausible. The desert hasn't changed in 3,000 years, and so on. So the second is to use a software called Unity 3D. Some of you who are playing games on various devices, a lot of those games are created in Unity 3D. It's another free software. You can go to unity3d.com and download it and teach yourself C# programming a little bit. And you can see this is one of the pictures I just showed in the previous slide. You can just import them in the software, and then with a little bit of magic and a few undergrad students, you can transform this into an immersive scene that that can recreate a plausible experience the way it could have been. Okay, and now we can add the characters. So we can add one character here, and we can then manipulate them a little bit. And then we're getting to the Microsoft HoloLens. These are actually my students at work. I don't know if you can see well with the contrast there, but they put on their goggles. And this is the only piece of equipment that costs money. It's relatively expensive, depending on who you ask. It's $4,500 a piece. Microsoft, don't hurry and buy one, because Microsoft's about to release a brand new one in the spring that has a wider viewing angle and a stronger processor. But it's awesome. This is, the reason it's $4,200, $4,500, because it's a full-fledged laptop with a depth sensing camera built in that's connected to the internet. So anything you can do on a $2,000 laptop, you can do on this thing. Voice, it identifies your signs, so you can interact with anything. You don't need any tool. You just talk to it, it understands your gesture, you can teach it new gesture, you can create new gestures with it. So, unfortunately, we don't have a setting here where you can experience that, but what you can do with the Microsoft HoloLens, you can shake hands with a virtual person. You won't feel anything in your hand, but you can actually shake hand and that person will interact with you. So this is not virtual reality, this is mixed reality, because you can adapt it to an environment. I'll show you some screenshots of how this works. So when we launch the interaction, what we see on the screen is, first of all, we can see a Hebrew text, which we can then translate into English if we want to. We can simply talk to Cortana, Siri, or, you know, your, as my wife says, your favorite girlfriend. They all have female names for some reason. But so on your screen, so put your goggles, you can see the passage, and our software understand what this passage is, and it loads the context. And then we can add those characters. This is conceptual, because we are at the phase of just getting it work. Then we'll make it look pretty. Making it look pretty takes a lot of time, but it's more predictable. Making it work, it's an unpredictable amount of time. So that's the focus right now. But just to give you an illustration that this is all in context based on analyzing the text. So the software figures out what text you're reading, analyzes it in real time, and pulls from the database the situation and the characters that match that particular text. So this is another view. Another great thing you can do with the HoloLens, you can take a picture of what you see, and you can take a video of what you see. And we're going to play some videos on YouTube. We have one, we did a simulation for teaching physics, which is unrelated to this presentation, but it is on YouTube. So you see the Windows menu, and you just do a tap in the air. It's called an air tap. And it's made with Unity. And it has, the depth sensors have the capability of scanning the environment and understanding the full sets of objects that you see. So it's not only that we're recreating a biblical scene somewhere in space, it is in this room. So if you put on your HoloLens, you just look around, up and down, you scan the room, and the HoloLens understands all the objects. So if you had a Moses-like character, you can tell Moses to sit on this chair, and the virtual character will sit on this chair. The audience will just see an empty chair, but you, through your glasses, you will see somebody sitting on this chair. And if you try to sit on this chair, he would say, "Hey, I'm sitting here." And this is, we didn't invent that. That's a library that comes with a device, and these capabilities are built in. You just have to have experience in programming to harness them. And you can see an example here. This is a virtual ball that sits on that desk. And only if you wore the HoloLens, you can see the ball on that desk. So you can imagine now how, instead of seeing the room, I would see this, but I can recreate any scene at a palace, in a house. If I want to know what a house looked like or what life used to look like in biblical times, I have to interpret the passage I'm reading and have in my database enough information collected from all the sources available today on the internet So that repository is so vast that I should be able to recreate any type of house, in any type of climate, in any place throughout the whole biblical times and geography. And where do we plan to go beyond that point? As I started in the beginning, you know, what languages were spoken during Jesus' time? Well, first of all, we know that Aramaic was quite popular. In fact, it is most likely that Jesus spoke Aramaic. Most countries were recently conquered by Aram, which is Assyria in Hebrew, and Aramaic, they called themselves Aramaic. They wouldn't know what the word Assyria means. So when the Jews returned from the Babylonian exile, they brought Aramaic with them. However, Greek was the primary language in the Roman Empire. If you were an educated Roman, you spoke Greek. Since Alexander the Great, Greek found its way throughout many countries in the Middle East. And obviously Hebrew, who preceded both of them. So it's possible that all three languages were known to most people, but some had preference for one or the other. So in software, all I have to do is say Cortana, switch to Aramaic. I can see the text. I could record myself reading every single passage in the Bible in Aramaic, and you know, starting with, you know, if you would imagine you walked in Jerusalem, you know, roughly 2,000 years ago, and you ask, have you heard of Jesus? First of all, they wouldn't know who you're talking about because his name was Yeshua. So when you say Jesus, they had no idea what you meant. And you would you wouldn't say, you know, hello, how are you? You would say Mashlomcha in Hebrew, or you would say Ana ba'e shlomek aleikum in an ancient Aramaic. It's like today, you know, kids go to a party. We don't say hello, how are you? You say tzap, okay? You know? So look for tzap in, you know, a 20 years old literature. You wouldn't find it. So everything changes. So we have to adapt the message into our own language. The message doesn't change across the century, but the way we say it, it has. So with software, it's relatively easy to analyze text from multiple sources and infer how did people greet each other in the street. All we have to do then take this dialogue, use a voice narrative so we can hear it, impose it, or superimpose it on pictures from that region, add a little bit of animation to it, and we can recreate the whole thing, and then we can study in a totally different way. So we could have the language being translated in the Holy Lands, in English, in Latin, in Hebrew, with vowels, without vowels. This is very easy to convey that the change. And a lot of concepts are very different when you read biblical text in different languages. Just because sometimes in a language you need a sentence to say something, whereas in English you may need two or three words, or vice versa. Even the word good morning, it's two words in English, it's two words in French, but it's written as one word, bonjour, so, or hello, so that's simplifies the way we address. So I think it would be very interesting for us to be able to recreate and put ourselves in the mindset of the people that lived in those times. And this is very doable. That's all I had to say. I'm open to questions or discussion.
Reading comprehension either. would this be something that eventually would have some usefulness in that?
I think, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. If you take somebody who, well, you don't speak Aramaic, so you rely on a translation. So a Korean would rely on a third-hand translation going from an original text into English and then into Korean. So why wouldn't you just put them in that location and say, observe the people moving around and talking and greeting each other, and then talk about the meaning of the text. So I think if that's immersive learning, and we always say that immersive, you know, take a kid, you know, I didn't speak a word of Hebrew when I moved to Israel, but within 2-3 months I became fluent, and so do most people. If you teach kindergarten kids Spanish in an immersive kindergarten, they become fluent speaker in a week. So that's very possible. It just, you can create an immersive environment in that. Go ahead.
I can think that this is really great for introducing young people. They say young people, particularly children, see things pictorial and literally. It's literally true. But following the stages of faith says that people become more mature. More mature, they see things symbolically. And a lot of the stories, like, you know, Moses parting the waters and Jesus' resurrection, have tremendous symbolic power to interpret it symbolically. So I'm hoping this doesn't prevent that more symbolic. For example, you know, when you talk about the resurrection, it turns out the first stories were written by Paul in 1 Corinthians 15. And all he says is that Jesus appeared. He doesn't talk about an empty tomb. He says Jesus appeared. And then Paul says, well, he appeared to me, and he wasn't in bodily form. It was this voice from heaven that said, Paul, why are you persecuting me? There was no apparently physical manifestation, and yet it changed his life from a persecutor of Jesus to the greatest apostle. So, you know, I'm just hoping this doesn't impede people from this more powerful symbolic, as opposed to the biblical stories, ultimately, I think, are symbolic, have more power symbolic than they do pictorial or literary.
That's a great point. So let's look at young kids. So when you start at 1 year old, you show them picture books, and then they have, you know, little imitation fur so they can feel what the various animals feel like. And then you take them to the zoo, they pet animal, and then you teach them words, and they grow up and become scientists. Because so I think it's possible if done right. If you don't just say, okay, go play games and watch movies all the time instead of reading books. So, you know, as educators, this is our responsibility to prevent what you don't want to happen. But the tools are there. If it can be done, somebody will do it. So you may as well do it in an education way.
Okay, back there.
How much of this is a vision for the future, and how much of it is already working?
Part of it, not for the Bible, is already working. We have YouTube video to simulate a physics experiment. The technology is readily available today by anyone to download. We are now in the process of building the components. You can reproduce this. There is nothing here that we invented that's patented ours. We're just using pieces that already exist. You can go to Unity, download. You can buy yourself a Microsoft HoloLens or an HTC Vive, which is only $1,000. And you know, you can do all of that on your own today.
So it's feasible, but not yet done.
It's not yet done with this complexity, but you just need a grant and a few students and some time, and that's it. Yes.
What's your plan moving forward?
There we go.
To make this into a complete program and market it?
I'm not thinking commercially at all. So this coming fall, I'm teaching a class called Human-Computer Interaction. And in my class, I have 26 students. The whole class would be Microsoft HoloLens and HTC Vive, virtual reality at Grand Canyon. And we'll build this component. This will be homework this semester.
And the HTC is actually around $400. The HSC Pro, which is
the HSC Pro, it's
1,000,
yeah.
It's 1,000.
Yeah, it was just released about 2 months ago or so. Yeah.
All right, thanks very
Thank
much,
you.
Isaac. Okay, our next speaker is Paul Carr. And